The Louth Herald, the magazine of the Team Parish of Louth, a celebratory walk of about 2 miles, from Westminster Abbey where we had gathered, to St. Paul's Cathedral, led by a band, on a warm, sunny afternoon began this momentous day of thanksgiving and happiness. On reaching the cathedral, all the 1994 ordinands retired to the crypt to robe and alps in white stoles. We then met the Archbishop, Justin Welby, for photographs. As we stood on the steps, we were a wall of white. The Archbishop greeted us and chatted informally. Photographs over, we rushed through the three entrances into the cathedral. I was aware of a kind of roaring noise and unrealistically thought it was a lawnmower. And then as it increased, I thought it was an airplane. On stepping inside the relative darkness after the bright sunshine, I was momentarily blinded, but the noise had now reached a crescendo. As I regained my sight, I realized the whole enormous congregation was standing and applauding us. Tears sprang into my eyes. It was overwhelming and the first time that it dawned on me that we were regarded as pioneers. It was a strangely lonely and emotional walk up the aisle to my seat. I am told the applause lasted about 25 minutes. 20 years ago at my ordination in Lincoln Cathedral, I had thought that then was the pinnacle of our struggle to be accepted on equal terms, but Saturday, 3rd of May, at St. Paul's was the final acknowledgement. For me, 20 years as a priest, 30 years since I was made a deaconess in charge of a group of parishes, an experiment, said Bishop David Tustin, and 33 years since my ordination as a deaconess and many years before struggling to be taken seriously to train, possibly 40 years to be accepted. The service of celebration followed. It was beautiful. Readings were from Ruth 1:16-18, St. Paul's letter to the Philippians 2:1-11 and the Gospel St. John 20:11-18. The celebrant and president was Canon Philippe Boardman, with the Archbishop as deacon. Two testimonies given by the Very Reverend June Osborne, Dean of Salisbury, and the Reverend K. Boardman, Assistant Curate, S.D. Mary's Heweth. Music, smiles and happiness filled the cathedral. As Canon David Owen, who was present throughout as my guest, said, it made him proud of the Church of England. Many people have encouraged and supported me during these last 40 years. To name a few, the late Deaconess Ruth Miles, Bishop David Tustin, the Reverend David Lambert, Canon David Owen, who joined me for the walk-in service, numerous retired clergy and lay Christians, including particularly my late husband, David, and my children. All these must share in the joy and triumph. Thank you. Daphne King. Parish Registers. Baptisms. The 23rd of January. Phoebe Spendlow. The 18th of May. Jason Tanton. Adult. Chantel Taylor. The 25th of May. Evelyn Rose Bell. Elizabeth Grace Gilliatt. Elspeth Florence Mason Smith. Naomi May Brocklebank. Weddings and Blessings. The 3rd of May. Adam David Terry with Amy Ann Scott. Jack Barry Green with Danielle Mariden. The 31st of May. Aidan Paul Barter with Katie Elizabeth Jackson. Funerals. The 1st of May. Douglas Sidney Claude Locke. Age 90. The 7th of May. David Ward, age 67. The 8th of May. John Albert Charles Richardson, age 61. The 13th of May. Joshua Williams Powage, age 24. The 14th of May. Monica Macy Fairburn, age 88. The 15th of May. Charles Albert Reed, age 89. The 21st of May. Phyllis Mumby, age 87. The 23rd of May. Phyllis Mumby, Ashes. Jottings from S.D. James. Service times. Sunday services. 10 a.m. Sung Eucharist. CW 1. The singing is normally led by the girl Christas and men of the choir. Morning worship on the fourth Sunday of the month. 6 p.m. Choral Evensong. The singing is normally led by the adult choir. Weekday services. 8:30 a.m. Morning prayer. Monday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, 11 a.m., Holy Communion, BCP. Tuesdays, please note that on the first Tuesday of the month this takes place at Trinity Center, from the rectory, the arrival of our assistant curate. It seems a long time ago that I raced around the parish on Sunday morning to announce that Kate Toogood would be joining us this month to become assistant curate in the parish of Louth. Together with her family, she will be moving to Louth during June and preparing for her ordination as a deacon in the cathedral at the end of the month. Kate's first public appearance will be when she preaches at the morning service in St. James on Sunday the 13th of July. After the service there will be refreshments, and I encourage everyone who is able to come and welcome Kate in her ministry among us. I know that she will be spending the first few weeks living and working among us, going to various events to get to know people, and I am sure that she will receive a warm welcome, just as I found when arriving with my family not so long ago. Becoming a mission community. Across the diocese, parishes are being asked to consider how they might best work to take part in God's mission in their communities. Proposals were first outlined in reports that were written as part of the diocesan review and were presented to diocesan synod at its meeting last September. We have had initial discussions around the idea of what it means to be a mission community, and consensus seems to be that we start working with the pattern of the existing benefice within the deanery of Louth-esque. Each mission community is to be asked to reflect on how it serves its local community, both those who gather for worship and those who are touched by the church in other ways, and what part the buildings play as foci for the work and ministry of the church. Having had initial discussions at PCC meetings during the autumn of last year and spring of this year, we are now being asked by the diocese to respond with our initial thoughts by mid-July. To do this, the idea of being a mission community and an initial view on how we use our buildings will be discussed at our PCC meeting on June the 12th. If you have any strong views or ideas on how we engage with this discussion, please do not hesitate to get in touch with me. News from S.D. Michaels. Service times. Sunday services, 9:30 a.m. Sung Mass. CW 1 3 p.m. Baptisms, by prior arrangement. S.D. Michaels, notes. S.D. Michaels welcomed the Gilbert and Sullivan Amateur Operatic Society, who performed a wonderful selection of songs from the stage and TV as a part of their annual spring show. The audience were really delighted with the concert, and there was a real buzz of real enthrallment as folks left to go home. The next concert at S.D. Michaels is the Grimsey Bar Choir on June the 28th at £7.30. For more info or tickets, call Maria Vincent on 01507-328149. Tabletop sale, Saturday, June the 28th, 2014, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, South Elkington Church Institute. To book your table, ring 01507-609774. Cost £2 a table. St. James Guild. Meet at Church House at 2:15 p.m. on Wednesday, the 11th of June 2014. Hostess, out for lunch. Pam Ledger. Genesis 1, Part 5. Do you remember the five-stage journey of life? The first part, stages 1 to 3, lead away from God. This road is easy, and the gate is wide, but it leads to destruction. Matt 7:13. The second part, stages 3 to 5, has a narrow gate and a hard road, but it leads to life. Matt 7:14. Only the second part is creation. Part 1 is destruction, traveling away from God until, by stage 3, you are as far from God as it is possible to get. This is where, in verse 2, General begins his account of creation. His image of the absence of God is a formless, empty and dark ocean. There is nowhere to take a stand, no reference point and no hope. That is, until we learn that, even here, The Spirit of God is sweeping over the face of the waters. General is about to recount for us the creation of heaven. He will bypass the long journey of stage 4 and take us directly to the final consecration of stage 5. Concept merging into consecration, and it will be the consecration of earth which turns it into heaven. In the time of General, the consecration of a temple, or a tabernacle, was a 7-day affair. 1 Kings 8:65. He makes it clear that it is the earth which will be consecrated by the content of those 7 days. They fall into 3, 3, and 1. The first 3 days cover global concepts. The next 3 days consecrate the specifics associated with those generalities. And the 7th day is the new heaven and new earth, the age to come, God's kingdom in all its fullness. Day 1, General 1 to 3 to 5, is light and dark, day and night. This is time. From the days of General to our own time, this is how we're aware of it and how we measure it. Hours, minutes and seconds are based on day and night. Day 2, 1 to 6 to 8, and the first part of day 3, 1 to 9 to 10, concern sky, sea and land. Three-dimensional space. Not the same three dimensions which we use today, but the meaning is the same. The latter part of day 3, 1:11 to 13, is about vegetation, which here represents matter. So in the first 3 days we have what, even today, would be regarded by most people as the total content of our universe, time, space and matter. The next 3 days delve deeper into these matters. Day 4, 1:14 to 19, concentrates on the creatures associated with the light and dark of day 1, the sun, moon and stars. They are for signs and for seasons and for days and years. V 14, they beat out the rhythm of time. Day 5, 1:20 to 23, is for the consecration of the creatures of sky and sea. Day 2, birds and fish. Day 6, 1:24 to 31, follows on from day 3 with the creatures of land, first the animals and then the final climax of humankind in God's image. The finale of any temple consecration was the setting up of the image of God, so that the worshippers could see what they were worshipping. In God's consecration of the whole world as his heaven, it is finished, 2:1-3. When the man in his image is lifted into place so that the God who no one has seen can be known. Earlier I said that John's Gospel gives us clues to understanding Genesis 1. Let me repeat that last sentence and give references to John for you to compare it with. In God's consecration of the whole world as his heaven/tabernacle, JN 1:14. It is finished, JN 19:30. When the man in his image, JN 1:1, is lifted into place, JN 3:14, so that the God who no one has seen can be known, JN 1:18. This, of course, takes place on day 6, Friday. Since this is the day on which creation is completed, it is a Good Friday, or according to Genesis 1:31, a very good Friday. Once we see these parallels within John, we can see that he understood the week of Genesis 1 as the final week of creation. But also, do you remember that realized eschatology? John is saying that the final week has been brought forward into Holy Week, climaxing on the cross. From John's perspective, God created heaven and earth, was entirely in the future. From our perspective, it is in the past tense because he did it on the cross. That was the first fruits, our guarantee of the harvest still to come. Remember my earlier question, where is the tabernacle in Genesis? The answer is, look around you. It is everywhere. The goal of creation is to transform the whole world into God's heaven, of which the tabernacle is just a model or foretaste. Our world is a building site, but however chaotic it may often appear, That is what will ultimately emerge. But there is more. In the third paragraph of this article I said that General Bypass is the long journey of stage 4. I lied. Tidbits from Trinity. 11 a.m. Holy Communion on the third Sunday. Say. Revises. 8:30 a.m. Morning prayer each Tuesday. 11 a.m. Holy Communion on the first Tuesday of the month. Communion on the first Tuesday of the month. 11 a.m. Holy Communion on the third Sunday. Services. 8:30 a.m. Morning prayer each Tuesday. 11 a.m. Holy Communion on the first Tuesday of the month. Regular activities at the Trinity Center. Tuesdays. Tasty Tuesdays. A lunch and time to meet and talk on the first Tuesday of the month. Contact Trinity Center to book. Wednesdays. Wednesday drop-in. From 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Free advice and support. No appointment needed. Fridays. Fish on Friday. Meet from 10:30 a.m. A drink and a chat. Followed by a lunch of fish and chips at 12 noon. No booking needed. Sundays. Sunday lunch. A full roast meal on the third Sunday of the month. Contact Trinity Center to book. Theology Bites 3. Faith. Reason and Dawkins. Part 1. Faith. We are told, even faith the size of a seed can move mountains. We talk of ourselves as being people of faith. Sometimes we talk about our faith being weak or faltering in some way. Faith is something, especially when thinking of Christ's remark about seeds and mountains, that we both value and regard as powerful and essential. But faith is a thing that has come in for something of a bashing in recent times. For instance, Richard Dawkins, the famous biologist and atheist whose globe-trotting campaign against faith often gets media attention, says that faith is something we should ditch. It's a useless waste of time. It enables people to believe in 6 impossible things before breakfast, and encourages us to hold on to pie in the sky nonsense when we have no evidence for even so much as the existence of the pie. It even does harm. He is not shy about reminding the world that suicide bombers have quite happily blown both themselves and others to bits on the basis of faith. Don't worry, though. He doesn't regard, or we roll an ICV people in quite that light. We are merely elderly, confused, and rather put out by the world out there. We are simply weak and rather pathetic, needing our faith as a kind of crutch because we do not possess the strength to face the world as it really is, red in tooth and claw. There is worse to come from friend Dawkins about faith. Faith, we are told, is a thoroughly irrational road if we seek true understanding. It is a pre-scientific anomaly that hangs on by a thread, and that should have been cut years ago. Belief in God, or gods, may have been understandable for people who lived years ago, before we had science to tell us about the actual nature of the world. So, for example, we once needed the god Thor to explain why thunderstorms occur, as if earlier peoples posited their gods for no better reason than to act as quasi-scientific explanations of natural phenomena, mere placeholders awaiting the real thing to be supplied much later on by the likes of Dawkins. Such naivety about ancients. However, rational people have now learned better. We have more sensible explanations for things these days, and these explanations are based on evidence. Faith, on the other hand, is based on clerical authority and dusty, ancient books we call the Bible. So faith is damnable stuff. Instead of being people of faith, we should become people of reason, and people of evidence. Ah, then shall we see the light. For Dawkins, faith is in opposition to reason and evidence, both now and historically. Faith tries to hold back the rational progress of mankind, and to encourage our children into it is nothing short of child abuse. Do any of these charges stick? I have heard Christians themselves agree that faith and reason are opposite poles, that faith is something we need when reason fails us, that if we had reasons and evidence for everything, we wouldn't need faith, and so on. This is dangerous talk. If we talk that way, we are playing Dawkins' own game. Just what, though, should we admit to? Are we weak, as Dawkins thinks? Often, Yes, that's just being human. Do we need support in living life? I would say so, and I would say so without being coy and sucking my thumb. But once upon our Christ crutch and given refreshment, we need to walk the walk of the Christian disciple and not lean on that crutch as a lazy sweeper leans on his brush. Have religious people ever been violent and warlike? Of course, though a deep question lurks here. If, 2,000 years ago, instead of the arrival of Christ we had the arrival of a virus that wiped out all religious faith, subsequent history would have been very different. But would it have been any more rational and any less bloody? I have seriously to doubt that. We're all fallen people. Moreover, we may never have developed modern science, which, many historians agree, required the Christian conception of God to get underway. A different story. For early Christians, walking the walk occasionally meant being fed to the lions. In being fed only to Professor Dawkins, we present-day Christians, in this country, at least, have a far easier time. To employ one's rather notorious metaphor, it is rather like being mauled by a dead sheep. But although I think that Dawkins is fundamentally mistaken about faith, we do need to be very clear about just what it is that are we being called to have when we are called to have faith. Without that clarity, we are the ones who will forever be very easy meat for the atheist. And next month I will outline a far more traditional and viable way of understanding faith, one in which there is no opposition to reason or the need for evidence. The Bishop of Lincoln writes, I write this shortly after it has been announced that the Queen has approved the nomination of Canon David Court as the next Bishop of Grimsby. It's an enormous pleasure for me to be welcoming David at such an exciting time in the life of our diocese. David is currently the Vicar of Cromer in Norfolk, a large seaside town in the largely rural diocese of Norwich. So he brings first-hand knowledge and experience of life in a diocese very similar to Lincoln. He brings a wealth of gifts and experience which will be a great asset to us in the work we are doing to create more faithful, confident and joyful Christians, as together we work to transform the lives of people in all of our communities. David will be a suffragan bishop and, like all suffragans, we'll share the work of the diocesan bishop across the diocese in some of the traditional leadership of the church in needing services of confirmation and ordination, for example. But as his title suggests, he will also have particular involvement with Northeast Lincolnshire, the most populous part of our diocese. David will be consecrated at St. Paul's Cathedral, London, on the 25th of July, and will be welcomed to the diocese at a special service in Lincoln Cathedral on the 27th of July. Please make a note of the date in your diary now and look out for more details of this coming your way. David begins work as Bishop of Grimsby in September. Please pray for him, his wife, Anne, and their family, as they prepare to join us. Christopher.